Oh, hi.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, no, sorry, never live. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host my show, Life After Happiness. Today, I'm with a lady named Dale Shea. Is that you? You there?
It's psychic Dale Shea.
Okay. Now. Okay.
I think we have a.
Is the echo gone now?
Yeah, I think so.
I think it's gone. Okay, good. Yeah, it might have been because I'm talking to you through your phone. Now, what is your background?
In the psychic world, you mean?
Yes. I mean, yes, it's in the psychic world.
You mean, how did I get into this, or how did I become a psychic?
Yes, how did you get into this, yes.
Okay. Basically, Jonathan, it's genetic. It runs in my whole family. I was encouraged as a child to tell my dreams, tell everything I saw, because my mother was extremely psychic, my father, my grandmother. So it kind of ran in my family, and it was no big thing. It was quite normal growing up in Newark, New Jersey, originally, where I was born, and then moved on to other places. But my parents were very psychic, and one of my favorite, fondest memories is we had moved to Lakewood, New Jersey, and my parents owned a luncheonette. My dad was a chef. And at the luncheonette in Lakewood, being a child and being psychic is kind of a lonely life, because if you blurt out things, you know, it scares people. So I didn't have any friends. So I had to make my own little world, and I would play buried treasure. And around the area of where my parents' luncheonette was, and I would dig up things. And my first experience was digging up $200 and going, wow, I mean, you know, that was a lot of money in those days.
Yeah, I imagine it was.
Yeah, in the 50s. And then going to a different spot, digging something up, went to four different spots until I got about $1,000. And then I figured, uh-oh, I better tell my parents. You know, I was young. So I did, and they thought I was taking the money. Like, where did you
get
this?
Well, you know, when you really think, that's an honest thing to do. I mean, there are some kids, you know, you give them $1,000, and they're going to, you know, run with it.
Well, yeah, but this was in, like, say, around 1959, and, you know, so I told them about it, and they kind of, like, didn't believe me, you know. But what happened is the police were called in, and inside the luncheonette was also a pharmacy, and somebody was stealing from the pharmacy, and they were burying the money around the area. And I was tracking them without even knowing it, because I was just...
In other words, without even realizing that you were being detected.
You're right. I was tracking him, you know. So I was playing buried, my thing was called playing buried treasure. So that's my first big remembrance of anything, you know, everything is looking back, not looking forward.
Right.
And then as years went by, my sister got pregnant and married and moved to Los Angeles. So my parents, we had a fire in our apartment and it burned down, and it was a god-awful thing. That day I was supposed to stay home with my dog, and my parents ordered me to go to my aunt's house in West New York, and I refused to not go without my dog. And I took my dog and my pillow, and when we came back, the house burned down. So we ended up living in West New York, New Jersey for a while, and used to make regular trips into New York. And basically, then we went to Los Angeles, where my sister was, and through that, through Los Angeles, I don't know, things just evolved. And as time went on, I got married. My first husband, we were married 21 years, and we moved to Lake Tahoe, and I became a blackjack dealer, not letting on to anyone that I was psychic, because every time I told someone I was psychic, I got fired. So they thought I was
crazy.
You got
fired? I mean, you know, that's interesting, because in a world where generally people don't even believe in psychic, you know, why would they fire?
We're talking in the 60s now. And we're talking in the early 60s and people being scared of it, you know. So if I told anybody I was psychic and I worked somewhere, I got fired, you know. So anyway, had various jobs. But in Tahoe, where I am residing at the moment, and Hawaii, I worked as a blackjack dealer at Harvey's Casino. And I used to say it's going to take a bomb to get me out of here. And in the 80s, early 80s, there she blew, the only casino in the history to blow up. And I was out of a job. And only my best friends knew I was psychic. So they kind of, at the Pony Express in Lakewood, I mean in Tahoe, they introduced me to the sheriff. And he said, well, if you're so psychic, read my chapstick. And he handed me the chapstick, and I read it, and then the next thing I knew, I was in a prison behind bars and looking at lie detector test form. Also, at that Pony Express was a radio DJ, and he wanted me on his show. So I did the first, very first show out of Lake Tahoe in the early 80s, and at that time, I started off as a tarot card reader, and I would read the tarot cards. So I read them on air for anybody who called in, and the show was an overnight success for 5 years. The owner of that show, of that station, owned a place in Honolulu. So when I went for a vacation in Honolulu, he asked me if I'd want to drop into the Honolulu station and do the same thing, and I did. So needless to say, I was going up and back for a period of 5 years of doing Tahoe, Hawaii, Tahoe, Hawaii, Tahoe, Hawaii, with very high ratings in radio, and did radio for about 25 years total everywhere, London, everywhere, and basically did radio, and until somebody decided to give me my own pilot television show, which in the early 80s didn't go, I mean, it never aired because, again, had the newborn Christians after it and, you know, want to, you know, have a psychic on TV. So I ended up doing my own television show called ESPNU and in Hawaii, and I paid for it myself, and at one point had over 200,000 viewers, 6,000 people try to get in on the lines. I was kind of like the innovator of the time in Hawaii. So ever since then, I've been going up and back from Hawaii to Tahoe. That's it in a nutshell. I mean, you know.
I mean, you know, does it ever, like when you see something like a bomb, because obviously that's what you were doing when you said there she blew or something.
No, I didn't see the bomb.
Okay,
I was making a joke.
You're making a joke, so it's sort of like
saying that because I was a blackjack dealer, nothing was going to get me out of here unless a bomb blew up the place.
I thought maybe.
But
you
I find when I make jokes, my friends all back off and go, "Don't say that."
I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's hard because I guess what I'm trying to say is that I would think that doing what you do, the emotions get to the best of you. And how do you stop the emotions from getting the best of you? Because you know, psychics, at least some psychics, you know, they have to be the bearer of bad news. And,
right.
And you know, I would think that if you were doing the kind of stuff that you do, and I'm not putting it down, I'm just saying, like, you know, it's like you would start to think, oh, God, I mean, how do you? I mean, people are generally upset. You know, I mean, you know, you're dealing with, I'm sorry, but a lot of people can be very upset when they come see you. And
right, right. And it's an unfortunate situation. It can be a very negative job, but I specialize in the future and going into the future. And to me, that's very easy because that's my love is the future. My accuracy is about 85% into the future. And I do that through psychometry, which, you know, either I tap into the brain or in person, I hold on to an object to see into the past, present, and future. And I never know where I am in time. So I ask my client, you know, did this already happen? No, it hasn't happened. Okay, well, where am I? Oh, you're in the present. Well, then I go into the, you know, from there to the future. No, that hasn't happened. So let's put it on the back burner as of the future and then call me when it does. you know, and I always like my people to call me back and tell me what has happened, you know, and so I can get better at it. Or if I mess up every so often, one in 2,000, I will, you know, let me know so I can figure out what I did wrong. So basically, I specialize in the future, but I've also done, let me get my website out, but I've done Vegas, Tahoe, Reno, London, you know, all over the place, and I have done shows, and I have produced, I have done, written 5 books that are published by Blue Dolphin Publishing. I hate to talk about myself, so I'll let you ask the questions, okay?
That's
I don't want to act like I'm bragging, because I'm
no,
not, I'm very...
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Very low-key.
You know, I mean, we were here. I guess, you know, my thing is that, like, when I first called you, my impression of you is sort of a no-nonsense person, you know, it's a good thing. You know, it's a good thing.
No, I understand. You're 100% right. Tell me like it is, yeah.
It was hard, you know. It's like, I was like, oh, God, you know, wanted to make sure that, you know, I looked, that I was well-bred, you know, for this lady and everything, and that but then I started thinking, you know, if a woman works with, I think you consider yourself like a psychic detective or something, is what it is.
Well, that was kind of pinned on me. I mean,
Yeah, I understand. Sometimes things can be pinned on you that's not necessarily you.
I specialize. Every psychic specializes in something different and what they love, and I love the future. You know, so that's where my expertise is. And I also give counseling. So I don't just say, here, this is the way it is, and then leave you hanging. So I look at your options, what's available to you, how to get from point A to point B. It's a complete reading. It's not just, gee, this is what I see, you know? It's not
mm-hmm.
that. And the no-nonsense comes from me growing up back east. So, you know, that probably has a lot to do with it. And I've been in the business for about 30 years. So, you know, I've seen it all, done it all. And, you know, I see that when I look at psychics nowadays, I just see, I hate to say this, all the fairy tale stuff. And, you know, I can figure out 90% of what they're doing. It bothers me that the ethics of being a psychic is so bad in America, it's ridiculous. I mean, there's no ethical, like in London and stuff like that. They actually have schools, they have testings, they have licensing. Where in America, anybody can say they're psychic, you know? And it bothers me. I look at what psychics there are and how good they are and rate them, and I'm going, you know, there's a few good ones. There's only a handful of good psychics in the world.
You know, there's one that it's interesting because people have different opinions of what they consider to be good. I mean, it's hard because I think that, you know, what you do, I think you have to develop a thick skin for what it is that you do.
Oh, you got that right.
I was reading up on you. I won't mention everything, you know. I'm just going to say this is a general overall picture. I was like, okay, yeah, anybody that has done what she's done, I guess you have to have a thick skin because, you know, it's like, it's not just a little girl playing treasure chests, if you get my direction, you know.
Yeah.
Even
well, I appreciate that, Jonathan, that you see that. Very few people do see that. And, you know, when I do a reading, I just stay... I can't get emotionally involved, so I have to stay back, you know, and I've learned to put up a shield and just guide the person, counsel the person, tell them what I see and help them. Is it okay if I give my website out so that people can check me out, which is, it's my name, which is Dale, Daylee, Shear, Shear.com, the official website. And, you know, you'll see a lot of stuff on me that has been written, and
right.
I've always had the Skeptic Society after me for years, and I just totally ignore that.
I know,
basically, been on a lot of national TV, and But I'm more low-key. I want to do one-on-one with people. I don't like, as I'm, I get older, I don't like blood and gore anymore. I mean, there's such as cases I have worked on.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that. I can understand that. I would think that, you know, like, we, I'm sure, you know, you would say join the club if I asked you how many psychics have been asked about the O.J. Simpson case. I mean, how many of you have been asked? I mean, it's so
well,
common.
I wasn't asked. That was. Let me just briefly tell you what happened there. I was working for Hard Copy, which is no longer on TV, but I worked directly with Doug Brunner. I didn't know O.J. Simpson from anything. I just saw, just like everybody else, a car on a freeway and running around and wondering what that was. Anyway, I have been talking to Doug about my next assignment. I had worked for Hard Copy for 2 years on national TV, and I asked him about the O.J. thing, you know, because I don't follow football or know anything much about it. And he says, well, why don't you tell me? I said, why don't I tell you? I don't know what you're talking about, you know. So he explained to me, and he says, hey, how would you like to work on the O.J. case? I said, well, only under one circumstance, which is I did get to see the family of the Nicole Brown Simpson family on TV, and I know the mother is very psychic. And if she's into it, I would like to work with the family, not so much about the O.J. thing. He said, well, we'll see what we can do. And sure enough, the family was very open to me working with them. So I worked secretly undercover for 2 years with the family and with Marcia Clark, and work with them in every way I could to tell them the real story, what really happened. And I was wrapped in the clothing of Nicole Brown Simpson. I have her last cigarette smoked, her last ashtray, everything, and wrapped in her clothing at the condo. I believe it was in Brentwood. This is a long time ago. So, and I was able to tell everything I saw, and what happened and why, and what created the situation, and that he was guilty. And I was at the house when O.J. had called on several occasions, and I also was in the courtroom. That was surreal. They just threw me in the courtroom to just look at O.J. and see what I felt.
Yeah.
So that was very surreal. And it wasn't like I never go after these things. They just, like, fall in my lap.
Okay, let me ask you this. Where were you when Kennedy was shot, and did you feel anything?
You mean Bobby?
Jack, present.
I was a little kid. I'm not that old.
Okay, what about...
No, Bobby Kennedy?
Yeah.
I was in L.A. and saw him. I was campaigning for him and saw, it was my first election, and saw him right on Fairfax Boulevard, and he waved to me before he was killed. And him and Rosie Greer. And I saw this bright light around him, which I had no knowledge of what that bright light meant.
Right.
Which means, you know, either you're ready for fame or you're ready for death, you know.
Yes.
It's either or. And I had no knowledge. I was just, like, so happy. And, no, I didn't have any premonition about that because, again, I was too young and I never was into that.
Well, I'm not saying you're old. I'm just saying it does, you know, even a kid, I think, could experience something, you know. I mean, it is possible. Like, what about 9/11?
I'm not a world predictor. There are psychics that get into that. I had no knowledge of it, none. I don't do world things, and I...
You deal with this small picture.
Yeah, I deal with people one-on-one, and I know a whole bunch of my friends in those days, we were reading tarot cards like crazy, and we were wondering why the tower kept falling on everybody's cards, and it usually means a world event when that occurs. But, no, I didn't have any knowledge of 9/11. Oh, I didn't have knowledge, but I was told of it 5 years prior to it happening, and let me tell you how. This is wild. My teacher was Peter Hurkos. Did you get to read about him?
I read a little bit on him, yeah. It was, and that he was your mentor. You can talk about him.
Yeah, he was the greatest psychic of last century. I mean, phenomenal. Worked for Kings, President Reagan. I mean, just incredible. The man was incredible, and I had the honor of working with Peter and being introduced to him and being accepted to be his only living protege. And I had a undergo testing by the United States government, by all kinds of things in order to pass it under the Reagan administration, in order to do what I had to do just to be trained by Peter, and he felt I was the most gifted beside his daughter. So I actually forgot where I was. Peter was... Yeah, he was phenomenal. And after he passed away, which maybe about 10 years ago, I don't have the exact date, I'm very close with his wife, Stephanie Hurkos. And when he passed away, we put a tape recorder by his grave. It was a crypt. It's in Los Angeles at Forest Lawn. And we walked away, had lunch for about an hour or two, came back, and when we came back, his voice was on the tape telling us how he died. Well, every so often, talking to Steph, who is not psychic, she would kind of drift off while talking to me or almost falling asleep every so often, and Peter would come through in a channel. He would channel, and I believe that this happens with a lot of people, that they're channeled through, you know, a psychic. So he channeled through Steph and would tell me things. 5 years prior to 9/11, he was saying, oh, my God, you got to stop them. You got to stop them. They're training in the U.S. They're training in the U.S. You've got to call somebody. You've got to call somebody. We didn't know what the heck was going on. We couldn't make sense of it. And, oh, my God, it's going to be terrible in New York. It's going to be terrible here. Oh, they're training. And we couldn't make sense. And who do you call? You know? And he was telling me, you've got to tell people this. You've got to tell people this. And we had no idea what this was all about. And it turned out to be 9/11. Exactly what he had said.
Right.
Exactly what had occurred.
Does he, you know, it's I mean, the thing is that, you know, mentors like that are always good to have. I think the thing about, the reason I ask about, I would think, it's funny that you say that you're a world, you're not a world person, that you're a person, but I would think that world can be a lot more difficult because, I mean, you know, for something like 9/11, I mean, we're not just talking about one murder, you know.
Yeah, but sweetheart, who are you going to call and tell as a psychic? I mean, there's no psychic hotline to say, hey, you know. We're going to be attacked and da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, I understand that.
They don't believe us anyway, so does it really matter?
That's the thing that always gets me, is that they say, you know, that people go after the psychics when a disaster happens, and they say, well, how come you didn't predict that? You know, I think
that's because...
It's
ignorance. One of the biggest cases that I just worked on a couple of years in Tahoe, did you hear about the J.C. Lee Dugard case?
No, I did not.
Oh, gosh. I don't know where you've been. She was missing for 18 years, and then she was found in San Francisco in the Bay Area, and this guy kidnapped her, and she gave birth to three children through him, and some cops found her. That doesn't ring a bell?
I think I've remembered something like that. I have a girl missing for 18 years, but I don't remember the name. I mean, I might have remembered the details of the story, though.
Yeah, I worked on that case for free for the family up in Tahoe. I was called in 1991 to work on that, and I said, she's alive. She's been kidnapped like a prostitution ring. And I said to the parents, I said, you know, you will see your daughter again, and she will walk through a door, and you will see her. But I can't help it, happened like 18 years later. And, you know, as far as finding where she was, the police were too involved with pinning everything on the stepfather when it wasn't him at all, you know, and we were good friends with him. So they didn't bother to look where anybody was telling him to look. And then I got a lot of flack over that because, you know, I did this for free. I did it for the family. They thanked me privately. But it was like, you know, oh, well, you're going after fame. And, you know, and the funny thing is I don't ever go after fame. It's the thing I hate most. I will hide from it everywhere I go, and then I run right into it.
Well, I mean, and also, you know, the case that you just described, I mean, like I was going to say, when I was getting ready for this interview, I was kind of thinking, oh, my God, some of the stuff that she's done. I couldn't do it. It would be too much for me. I mean, you know, a woman kidnapped in a prostitution ring and...
Well, it wasn't a prostitution ring. It was a guy who kidnapped her and used her and had sex with her for 18 years with his wife watching and gave birth to... She gave birth to three children and she never called her parents because she was scared that they would take the kids away.
Oh, I remember something like that. Yeah, I think I remember something like that. He says, I'm not leaving you or something. I'm not taking you home or something. I think I remember a case like this. It just happened.
It was just not too long ago, about a year or two ago. But anyway, a couple years ago. But anyway, I'm best friends with the stepfather, and we communicate all the time. But, I mean, you know, it's I think a lot of the cases I do work on, we find the children that I did work on, we find the children alive, and that's very pleasing. I don't like to find anybody dead. I don't like to tell anybody that their child is dead and they're never going to see him again. You know,
I'm kind of surprised you've never vomited in the middle of a reading. I mean, that's upsetting news, you know? I mean,
because I told you I stay removed from it.
Okay.
I block it so that everybody else around me pass out, but I don't.
Yeah, that would be true, because, I mean, it's they say that policemen, they have to kind of...
I've never seen a dead body, so... When I tell someone to hunt for somebody, like in the Roxanne Tandel case in Hawaii, this girl was missing, and I only worked for the family, and they came to see me, and I mapped out where she was, and I showed them on a map by holding her clothing, and basically I said, you need a search party, and they got a search party of 70 people, and they found her exactly where I said. So I don't actually get to see the body. All I'm going to do is give you the information, and then you got to do the legwork.
Right.
I'm not going to do it.
No, I.
And again, I'm going to give my website, which is Dale, D-A-Y-L-E, Shear, Schear.com, to check me out.
Okay. That'd be good. I'm impressed. You know, I am impressed with your thick skin. You have a thicker skin than I do.
Well, only when it comes to that, my work. Not when it comes to, I'm an animal lover and I have two German shepherds. And
oh, yeah.
I hide behind my animals and I love them to death. And if anybody hurts a dog or a cat, I go ballistic. So,
it's funny. I was online just now and there was this thing that said that, you know, they were talking about depression. And this guy was reading an analogy. This black dog was following me, meaning that black dog was an analogy for depression. And I got upset. Not upset, but I just thought that a black dog was a bad metaphor for depression, you know?
I've never heard that.
Yeah. But... You know, it's this new thing. But I tell you, you are an interesting lady. It's amazing when, by the way, I hope you didn't imply that you were old earlier. I was saying that you probably.
No. Psychics are young at heart.
They're young at heart. When was the first time you met, what was the guy's, your mentor's name?
Peter Herko,
yeah. When did you meet him?
I'm sorry. Oh, in the 80s. I don't know date, time, or place because I don't mark anything down, so I don't know. It was in the 80s.
Okay.
Around 85, something like that, 84.
All right, well, we have about a minute left. Is there anything you wanted to say or maybe...
No, I would love if it... Anybody wants a private consultation, they can look me up on my website.
Okay.
I'm also, if you want me to friend you, I'm on Facebook, DaleSchear.com, DaleSchear.com. Tell us how you like the show. And, that's about it.
Right.
Or you can go to DaleSchear.com, you know.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate the call.
Okay.